everybody, and welcome back to the Research VR Podcast. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me is Mr. Peter Luckoff.
Hello, everyone.
And today we have two new special guests from Trip Inc. With me is the CEO and co-founder, Nenea Reeves.
Hey, how are you?
And we also have the president of Trip Inc., Zach Norman.
Hey.
And Zach's also my partner in crime and co-founder.
Like it. This is going to be a good group. Hello, everybody. Welcome today. We're hosting this in Big Screen, having our conversation in there. And we're getting to play with our new hands and torsos and fun UI things. How's everyone doing today?
Wonderful.
I'm doing great. I've had an adequate amount of coffee, so this will be fun. And this is, I think, officially my very first VR podcast, so it's great.
Right.
Thank you for making this happen.
I'm glad we're setting the trend for all podcasts to come, all these remote podcasts. I really think there's a future in using VR for these purposes, but obviously Big Screen wasn't really meant for it, but we got to make do of what we've got. Let's start today's episode with talking about some of the recent hardware news that we've come across. Starting actually with the new Windows mixed reality headsets. And so obviously you guys are, Nenea and Zach, you guys are totally welcome to jump into the conversation here and offer insights and opinions as they come. So Windows has been showing off these new headsets that they're working with OEMs. We've talked a little bit about this in the past. I think the most interesting part about the news is that Samsung has now thrown their hat into the ring.
Right.
They announced their kind of like higher resolution display with, I believe it's an AMOLED screen as well, with integrated headphones, also a microphone, which the other Windows Mixed Reality
headphones
don't have.
That are from AKG, so like a...
AKG, yes.
Does it have eye tracking capability in it?
Not that they said.
But it has inside-out tracking, as all the headsets do from Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. Right, so it's kind of a set it and forget it. You put on your headset and it...
Mm-hmm. But the news about this device were actually quite fascinating. I was scrolling today through the VR news and there was like, as we call it in German, extra Wurst. So it's like people were calling out that Samsung is once again, you know, doing something better than everyone else in VR, like they did with the Gear VR. They kind of, you know, overthrown the market. Now they have the better device for the mixed reality experience as everyone else, because surprisingly, all the other OEMs, as we discussed last time, were having basically the same hardware, just looking different. And now they, yeah, we are better. We can do it all. And it also is kind of looking like an Oculus Rift. And technically, it could be, you know, the killer of Oculus, right?
It looks like it has the same ergonomic features of the PlayStation VR a little bit, with the weighting, which I have found to be the most comfortable device out of all of them. What's that German
extra
word again?
Extra Wurst. Wurst is like sausage, so bratwurst. An extra Wurst, you say, when someone is getting, you know, a little bit too much extra stuff.
What a great term, right?
I love that. Germans have the best words.
This was an interesting piece of news because it's there now set at $499.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Competing with the Oculus Rift, I think, directly. Although the access to the content that it'll have will first start with the Windows kind of platform and what, you know, the 40 or 50 different launch apps that they had announced, as well as Microsoft's announced that all these headsets will support OpenVR, so there'll be Steam VR compatible and accessible, and all of that will work straight out of the box, which is really cool. That's right.
And so what makes it mixed reality?
It depends on what your definition of that word means, right?
Right.
I don't know. I think that's Windows's whole platform. You know, they call their HoloLens a mixed reality device. They call these devices also mixed reality. It just means it's a spatial computing device, and that does...
So ambient computing, spatial computing, mixed reality, next reality, holographic computing, they are throwing all kind of interesting terms that might confuse investors and consumers in the end, but hey, everyone wants, you know, to have their special name.
Look, I think we're going to look back at this period in devices where the distinction between AR and VR on a headset basis is one that's that will blur and be a non-existent distinction in, say, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah, I think we're all hoping for that as well, where we don't have to fiddle with these terms and whatnot. And whether it's mixed reality that is the term that stays around, who knows?
But I think the fragmentation, you know, at this early stage is the biggest headache for developers. Zach and I went through a lot of that in early days of mobile game development on feature phones. And eventually the standardization, though, really allowed for a lot more innovation.
So was there a big distinction between iOS and Android devices when you're...
This was even before that. So we were like, you know, Nokia. So the distinction would be anywhere from, you know, 64K app limit, size limits to 1 gig download. So you had to really optimize for each device, because somebody would be very upset if they bought a high-end device and got a lowest common denominator experience with that kind of range. So I'm seeing a lot of similarities in VR right now to those early days.
And a little bit of color for your listeners. Nene and I were early teams at a company called Jamdat Mobile. We were among the first to put cell phone games, games on cell phones in the United States. And so that's why you see that we saw that balkanized development and lived it firsthand all the way through the iOS Android transition as well.
Actually, Zach put the first 3 out of 5 games on the iPhone too.
Wow.
Technically sold
Zach and his team.
But technically on iTunes. Actually, it was for a click wheel iPod. So.
Oh.
But also the iPhone, too.
That's true. Right? That's true. I actually remember downloading a few of those click wheel games on my iPod video, actually.
Yeah. That's right. That was made from by us.
Yeah, I designed that game.
This is me clapping in VR.
You play the mini?
We also did.
Did you play the mini?
Yeah, my
game?
Friend of me had it. I was always playing it in school. It was awesome.
Yeah, should have studied. That was one of my favorite.
Whoa, that's... That's a really neat, neat place to have in history, guys. And it seems like we've always been trend-setting things. So,
but one question. If you experience this big fragmentation back, you know, with those old feature phones, technically, even though today the companies in VR tend to code it differently, still this mixed reality device from Samsung support Oculus and all the other platforms. So, is there maybe not such a strong fragmentation?
It's a lot easier.
Just in marketing.
It's a lot easier than it was back then, and especially when you use platforms like Unity or Unreal, they do make the porting a lot easier. For us as a young company back then, we just figured we'd solve the problem as opposed to just deliver on the devices with the big install base. And that allowed us to really dominate the market quickly. And so I think, you know, our attitude was more what's bad for us is worse for others. And so let's just solve the problem and keep innovating.
Yeah, it seems like the fragmentation, I think people this time around really understand how damaging fragmentation is to developers, and they want to at least create an umbrella that they can, content creators can put a piece of content and then have it kind of spread throughout the ecosystems that exist. So,
sure.
Let's see how that'll play out. So we'll keep our eyes out on the Samsung Odyssey headset. Anshul Sag, actually, he's an analyst for More, and he actually just tried it out yesterday and was telling me he was really impressed by the optics. The screen door effect is way more reduced than even the Rift, and so we'll report more as we get. Hopefully, we'll actually get a pair of these headsets soon. The next piece of news I want to talk about is actually the Zed Mini. So Zed is typically not really, wasn't thought of as a VR company a few years ago. They had a stereo RGB camera that they had released for both robots and drones to kind of basically have vision and to kind of do, you know, slam and movement and figure out where they are in the room. Actually, this is something that I tried recently. So the Zed Mini is a small pair of stereo head cameras that they're placing onto an Oculus Rift and HTC Vive. And what it does is actually create a pass-through stereo augmented reality experience with a Rift and a Vive. I tried it out recently. It's actually very compelling because it doesn't require... any kind of other trackers. It doesn't actually even require the Rift sensors, you know, the constellation tracking sensors to be in the room. since the headset can do all of the track, or the cameras can do all of the positional tracking itself. But in addition to that, you actually don't even need controllers or anything with a tracker or a lighthouse tracker on it, because if you have two cameras that are doing, you know, the mapping of the room, they can also recognize your hand as being something in front of your face and in front of another object, like a bullet or like a laser coming towards you. So the demo that I tried was actually, I was using my hand to like block these lasers coming from a robot inside of the room. And I think I even grabbed the book and I was like blocking things. I was like, this is really interesting. Like, it felt like a really, just a more natural experience when it comes to things. So I thought that this was definitely worth a look at, and I think they're going to open up a developer SDK soon for people to start thinking about how do you incorporate a stereo augmented reality experience with any of these VR or MR headsets to be able to support. So I don't know if they actually, I don't think they've talked about the Windows mixed reality headsets, but I'm sure they're thinking about it. But it's pretty neat, I have to say. Way better than the HoloLens's 30 degrees field of view.
Well, I hope it will reach the consumer soon, right?
I hope so too. What, do you guys have any thoughts on this? I mean, if you see a
They're going to need to make their money where they can, because ultimately, I mean, this is going to be native hardware pretty soon, meaning I think you got to imagine right now at Oculus, they're thinking about adding this kind of functionality into whatever part of their roadmap, whether it's next year or sooner or later, because ultimately mixed reality is where we all need to be. It's almost like thinking about a JPEG versus a PNG. The idea that you wouldn't have if you were making an ultimate file format for an image, you would include transparency in that, you know, thinking from the beginning. And if you were to make a headset from scratch right now, you would say, well, of course it has to have optics, and of course it has to have tracking, and of course it has to have transparency.
That's a really interesting way of actually putting it, is PNG versus JPEG with alpha layers and transparencies. Like that,
right?
Kind of, that's a very simplistic way, analogy of how an augmented reality and a virtual reality headset would work.
I mean, my point of view on it is it's always hard to get a consumer to add another peripheral or accessory. And I think the most successful historically in the games industry has been the iToy. And even then they got about, I think, and we can confirm this after, a 10% attach rate or conversion across the consoles.
I'd be surprised if it was even that high.
Thing that I would like to, you know, kind of mention is the fact that it was not very good to play with it. It was awesome, but it wasn't as convenient as, let's say, you know, the controller that you use to play your games on the PlayStation. And when you think, for example, from the perspective of a PC gamer, people spend a lot of money on extra keyboards and extra mouses and stuff. So when they really gain something that is an advantage or more comfort, they tend to spend the money on it, but not necessarily on extra features that are not supported by many games, because it's also a chicken and egg problem, right? I mean, why would I get the hardware if I'm not a developer? If there is no games, why would I develop games for it if there is no hardware? So it's kind of tricky.
I think that this cycle with hardware like this is going to be educational. And in other words, yes, this company may see an exit or may create value for their shareholders based on making something like this, but ultimately, that cycle of software development and broad distribution is where people make money. And so ultimately, it will not see broad usage or distribution until it gets kind of integrated.
I really hope, I mean, I think a play like this will have to be completed by some kind of a merging or an acquisition into one of the major headsets. Like another piece of news that we stumbled on this week was a company called Varjo raised.
Oh yeah, I'm very interested in this company.
They're developing a headset that is it's something ridiculous in terms of the PPI that they're claiming. The pixel per inch, I think, will be 3,000 pixels per inch compared to the Rifts and Vives, you know, 500 or almost 500. I mean, you know, the place for making the headsets, I think, really was like 2014, 2015 when people were coming around. Although, yes, there are new Windows MR headsets with new OEMs coming into the space. But for a lone wolf to kind of jump into it, I really think about what their strategy is going to be moving forward. And it has to be something that's going to be Steam VR compatible or Windows mixed reality compatible, something on those lines. Last week, we talked about the other 8K headset from Pimax that they announced. So
yeah,
it's interesting.
Oh, and they raised already 1.3 million on Kickstarter.
Right, right.
They're doing surprisingly well for very suspicious.
It means if you can get on the Reddit hype cycle when it comes to these devices, like Kickstarter devices, you can definitely make some money early on and at least give you some leeway to go. But I don't want to honestly concentrate on this headset too much. Let's move on to, this was just as a supplementary piece of news that the Windows Mixed Reality headsets will support SteamVR by the end of this year. And that's
a smart business decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Having access to the entire Steam library, I think, if you have high resolution headsets that are better than the crappy 16:9 monitor that you have at home, you know, if you have your headset being higher resolution, then that is itself an argument to want to buy a headset.
To be honest, this landscape of devices those days is like mind-blowing to me, because there used to be this war between iOS and Android, and Microsoft didn't want to release Office for iOS, and they changed the CEO and they did it and it was a huge success. But these are two companies, and now we have like Microsoft, Oculus, Facebook, we have Steam, we have all of those basically hardware and software and platform manufacturers, and they all kind of have to work with each other, so they have content. And then you have some peripheral companies like Leapmotion, and they are all kind of trying to pull the pie to them, but also get their stuff integrated somewhere and make good deals.
It's the wild west of VR these days, and hopefully the content creators aren't the ones that are are suffering because of that. I don't think they are. Well, I think that's the question is up to you guys, the developers,
exactly,
to answer that.
What do you think?
Well, we can certainly talk about that. I think the market is still so very small. And we're already seeing companies that were funded a bit too early going out of business or struggling because of that.
Microsoft.
And thank goodness, right? I think at least some of these companies understand that while we're in a market that has at best 2 million monthly active uniques, the content developers, if they really want to see innovation on these platforms that they're investing in, they need to support the people creating the content and the IP that will attract the users. So it is going back to what you were saying, Peter, the chicken and the egg thing applies to this as well, right? When does the market show up?
You know, I'll tell you something from my perspective that's interesting right now. Having developed hardware for different markets, these days there are so many tools and so much infrastructure to very quickly make electronic devices. And so what we're seeing right now is the fastest, most evolved market for the delivery of next generation electronic equipment being evolved very, very quickly, which means the window for variations is very small. And on top of that, we don't see these markets really explode until the devices have become very consumer focused. And even the Oculus Rift is, you know, not, if we look back on these devices, we'll kind of laugh. We'll go, oh my God, look how heavy they were. And
they'll be like the big brick cell phone.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that I think that the teams that will win are the ones that are actively consumer focused in their thinking. So thinner, lighter, less expensive, and I can tell you we'll be there making products for those devices.
And having less extra components to set up the experience. Like,
right,
you're comparing to a brick phone. Remember the first mobile telephone had kind of like the base and then the earpiece, with a cord that runs down. So you're carrying both. I guess you can make the similar comparison with trackers, whether they're the Lighthouse Spaces or the Oculus trackers.
Sure.
That's a component
The backpack PCs.
Or the backpack PCs.
I know.
Which are the most hilarious intermediary.
I still like them.
Big fan. And I think Insulation VR places also are a big fan of those.
I'll wait for the Chanel version of it.
It's actually a purse rather than a backpack.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll keep you warm in the winter.
Literally a portable heating pack. That's pretty funny.
There is a heater. There is a heater based on GPUs. I will put it in the show notes. But there is a company in France building heaters that are actually running on CPU and GPU and are actually doing calculation. You can heat your office with it. And I see this is VR potential.
That's hilarious. My first PlayStation 3 was also a space heater in my bedroom. So.
Coming to the
upgrade that they actually are pushing out to the headsets. Apparently, the new PSVRs are going to have native support for HDR pass through from the new processor unit. And apparently, they also have like these integrated earphones that they're adding to the headset. Basically, small changes that are happening, and supposedly it's like a few grams lighter as well.
Okay.
Good things, you know. All right. I don't know. Honestly, I haven't been following PlayStation's VR platform all that closely. I haven't seen new releases coming out from it. I hope they still have a lot of players. They were boasting like a million plus sold. So we'll see where that will integrate itself into all of these ecosystems.
It's still very small user base, though. Zach worked at Activision and I worked at EA. I mean, it's hard to get internal support at those big game publishers for audiences that small, you know? So,
which leads me, I think, to the saddest thing I heard this week, or at least that I saw, which was Halo Recruit is what the new Windows Mixed Reality, one of the big IPs that they're bringing into Windows MR, is something called Halo Recruit. Road to VR had a video up of their gameplay kind of going through the experience, which I don't know if it was the full experience, because what they posted was basically the stationary deck that you stand on with almost like a flat 2D screen that comes up in front of you, and you shoot these flat 2D enemies. And
wow.
And people were just like groaning and so disappointed at like, how could this be what you're setting your foot forward with? I'll scrub through the video here for us in big screen.
Oh wow!
Oh yeah,
which looks like kind of ridiculous. Why is this in VR? I have no idea. This might just be the training side of the experience, which I really, really hope it is. And hopefully we're not going through clickbait and falling for this type of thing. But Windows, I really hope you guys, or 343 Industries is making it. I hope they don't drop the ball on a major IP like this, because it's very dear and near to my heart, and I want to be able to experience that. So with that, let's jump into our main topic today, and we're talking about TRIP, and TRIPP is how you guys
spell it. Right, two Ps.
Nanea, why don't you kind of give us a little introduction as to, I guess you guys are industry veterans in the gaming industry.
We have worked in the games industry for a long time, and our CTO combines a lot of the neuroscience chops that we bring to the team. And so that composite, the idea for TRIP was born out of it. We've been working together as a team for a long time. And what we're focused on is creating what we like to call transformative experiences that are digitally delivered. And VR is the first method of delivery for the experience, because what we're creating is a product that we want to help you use on a daily basis to feel better or to change the way that you feel. And so taking this whole movement that's currently happening in the meditation and mindfulness field, and using the deep immersion of VR, audio and visual stimuli that are known to affect you in positive and beneficial ways. And then we combine that with what we know about gameplay mechanics that hit the brain in very specific ways. What makes a game fun? And I'm sure Zach can jump in and tell you a lot about his thoughts on that. But our goal with the adding gameplay mechanics, it's not a game experience, is really to create that flow state that all of us get when we're playing a great game. And can we create these sessions that are unique and can only be done in VR currently? We do see a future where some of the mixed reality devices and devices of the future that we don't know about yet will bring that quality of immersion that is really what we're leveraging as the multiplier with bringing all these elements together. So essentially, in one sentence, is we're creating a service that will help you change the way you feel.
How exactly does it work?
A few things that we can talk about. Some we're not ready to talk about publicly, but the experience starts off with a new way to meditate. And the goal of the beginning part of the meditation experience is really to create a state of receptivity to the trip itself. And then we start to transform the environment around you in a way that might feel a little like a really expansive, large-scale isolation tank or sensory deprivation. And then we start to take you on a journey with some movement that's very gentle. And yes.
Could you maybe for our audience explain what a sensory
deprivation tank is? Sure. It's actually, you know, we're based in Los Angeles, so these things are pretty common all around us.
Big in LA from, I think, Joe
Rogan. Very big.
Big impact in
yep,
that.
They are.
Yeah, Joe Rogan, Kickstarter as a business,
there's
right?
quite a few tanks, I have a lot of friends. They say, I'll meet you after I float kind of thing. And you hop into these tanks, and there, some of them you can even go with multiple people. And it's very dark, and you float, and there's a lot of sailing that gives you this feeling of weightlessness. Obviously, we're not going to create that in VR exactly, but there's a goal of kind of creating that sort of floating experience. And then the environment starts to transition and bring in sounds and visuals that are designed to support the feeling that you selected. So if you selected a trip that you want to be calmer or chill trip, or maybe something that amps you up, more energizing, what you'll see and hear will be targeting those responses.
Mm-hmm. I think the question that really comes to mind is, what sort of experiences that can be games or other VR experiences have inspired you to kind of go into this?
Can I take this one, Anaya?
Absolutely.
So to answer your question and also to kind of add on what Anaya is talking about, if you, as game designers, we for a long time have essentially made gameplay that made us feel good. But the specific feeling that we got from a given game was secondary to the gameplay. We wanted to create a milieu. We wanted to be a superhero. We wanted to shoot a gun at bad guys, or we wanted to be in an alien context and kill monsters. And that felt good because the act of doing it was good. And the actual way the user describes the specific feeling was a secondary effect. In other words, some people would feel calm, and some people would feel amped, and some people would feel excited. But ultimately, we knew that there was beneficial feelings come out of it. What I think Nene is getting at is we're putting together gameplay and audio and visual elements in a new kind of experience where we're architecting for a specific response first.
So going back to what specifically inspired us, Zach and I and our CTO, Andrea, just made a game for fun in VR. We all had day jobs, and I was actually an early stage investor in Oculus. I'm friends with the former CEO. We worked together at a company that Sony bought for the PlayStation. And so he had invited me and my cousin, Keanu Reeves, the actor, actually. And I brought Zach down, and we tried the Oculus, and we were inspired to make a game. But what happened to us is we made a very simple solitaire game that takes place in a haunted house. You can download it on all the app stores now, called Trip Solitaire. And it Zach actually kept having this feeling of retreating from his life when he was just testing our game. And when he would emerge from it, he had this sense of feeling refreshed. And then concurrently, I had a bunch of my friends over one day, and one of them is this young woman named Liz. I don't know if you ever saw her. She was in a reality show called My Life is Liz on MTV. And she said to me, "Oh my gosh, thanks for giving me an experience as close to ecstasy without actually having to try it or take it." And it was that moment that I was up all night doing a lot of research on the effects of VR on the brain and the studies that have been going on for the last 15, 20 years. And I called Zach up and I said, "I think there's something there that we can do that is inherently native to VR," something he had been pushing for. Because the thought of being a casual game company in VR wasn't that exciting to us. And we kept saying, what can we do that is different and can only be done in VR? And it was sort of those three things that inspired the idea, or the idea was born out of it. And we're not making any medical claims currently. We will be testing while we're developing, and we are working with a lab to also, you know, that's experienced with VR, and it's a neuroscience lab. And so we understand what is happening, but it's really our first approach is, can we create a new way to expand your awareness and make you feel the effects that you might from an app, like currently from Headspace, that is essentially just an audio file download. And what we can do in Trip is very unique in that environment and take you on a journey that might be a little bit shorter, 7 to 10 minutes, and give you a feeling of like a tonic that might calm you down. That's our first goal. And then we want to take our toolkit and then create something that might amp you up as well. So those are our first product goals. Yes, Peter.
Now the question is, what is your audience? Like, who do you imagine will get this experience and for what purpose? Now, when you mentioned so much science and maybe at some point also medical, would it go more into relaxing people and helping them, you know, to maybe prevent heart attack or some kind of other disease caused
by
stress?
Our first goal is to make it recreational. So we'll release the app into the app stores and the addressable audience that's currently available in VR. We'd really like to rally those people to give us feedback on our product. That's why we were really interested in coming to talk to you. And because it's really important for us to get at least qualitative feedback initially from the user base that is already there. And that's the same experience that we've had in the mobile game industry and the video game industry as well. You know, the gamers are the best at adoption of technology, but they're also great with giving us feedback as well on what we're creating. And you see that when we first started Jamdat, most of the people downloading our first mobile games were hardcore gamers checking out what they could do on the phone. And when we were first seeking funding, people would tell us straight to our face, no normal person will ever want to play a game on their cell phone. And, you know, and so, well, you know, and all of us have grandmothers who play, you know, Candy Crush. And so I think we'll see that. It'll take time to get more mass market with these HMDs. And obviously they have to be much lighter weight and easier to pop on and off for us to get there. But in the interim, we think that we can build a really good business, you know, by addressing the audience that's there.
And what kind of hardware stack are you
We're
using?
We're working in Unity.
Stack? So have you in Unity, and did you experiment with any fancy VR equipment, or are you just basing your main experience just on Oculus?
We're actually going to go across all devices. And we want to make sure that our device is optimized for mobile as well. By the time we get into market, we know that Qualcomm's chipset will be starting to get deployed, the VR native on Android. Our experience is controlled through gaze and head movement. That's why I'm always interested in eye movement and eye tracking and when they show up in the devices. We want it to be very...
Did you try the Fove? Did you try actually the Fove before?
No, I haven't tried it.
Yeah, that's one of the earlier Kickstarter headsets that was their main selling point, was an eye tracking headset. But now HTC has partnered with people back in the day with SMI before they were acquired by Apple, and as well as Toby, who also makes more eye trackers. So, and I think you're smart in thinking a little bit ahead in terms of the second gen headsets. But I think eye tracking will have to be a big part of that. But not only is it an input method is to use eye tracking, but also it is a analytic and kind of understanding the state that someone's in.
That's exactly right. And you're starting to see companies focusing on emotional feedback and recognition that way. That's important for us, and we'll tap into that as it evolves. The same way that, you know, we started off making games on Nokia 64K devices, right? And eventually, you know, continued to evolve all the way to the iPad and richer experiences. So I see our future very similar. So for us, that it's just we do want it to be accessible, and ultimately, I would like to have us be able to present Trip to the current audience that is using a lot of these meditation apps like Headspace and Insight, et cetera, as sort of a next level journey for them to augment those, you know, their experience with wanting to meditate.
You know, I'll add one thing. Let me add one thing. I'll say this, that ultimately we look at this as an electronic tonic. Okay. And anybody who needs a tonic, you know, if you will, I use that in quotes because obviously it's not in the common vernacular, but you know, ultimately we want to replace the person who comes home from work and needs a scotch or a glass of wine to relax.
Or augment it.
Yeah, right. Or exactly. So that we believe that, yes, right now we're looking at those people who are familiar with the concepts of consciousness hacking, the people who already go out and meditate, those people will get this thing right out of the box. But ultimately, we're going to be, you know, chasing a user who needs the benefit.
Right. And so our focus will be always on marketing the benefit of the application or the service of Trip. As we develop, I am always bringing our development team back to this concept of how is it making you feel? How does it make people feel? Because the tendency always in product development is to kind of get into the development aspect of it, but we have to always kind of step back and go, is this helping me feel better, you know, and what's my response to it? So with that, it's conceivable in the future one day we could be selling direct to consumer on devices that have our experience preloaded as well and extend beyond the existing user base. You look at like what Muse is doing with their device. And so a lot of these things are inspirational to us.
So I think I'll take a step away. Let's take a step back from the product and kind of talk a little bit about the science that's been driving some of the claims that you want to even test. So it seems like flow, I think, is a big aspect of what you're trying to achieve. What really is inspiring you about flow and I guess the products that have that or the activities that you see helping people achieve that state? How, you know, what are your thoughts in terms of those activities? How is VR going to be a factor in recreating those activities moving forward? I mean, and we can be speculative as well in terms of, you know, not thinking of where the hardware is now and what the potential or who the audience is that's bought headsets today. But let's
right. Talk and broad picture. We also want to kind of be careful about science and pseudoscience. And so ultimately, we want to make a what we're calling right now an entertainment product that is targeting a certain emotional response or sense of that. And obviously, we'll be testing and try to quantify real impact. And if we can make some substantive claims, you know, after a few different labs can validate that, we'll certainly go down that route. But there is just universally a lot of data and science on the impact of meditation and mindfulness. And this is why you're seeing CEOs and corporations bringing this into the environments, because it does, there is hard evidence that it has an effective and beneficial impact, not only on your health, but on your performance. And
also, you know, one thing I'll add too, Nenea, is that there is this growing body of science. And again, I'm not making these claims personally and not as a representative of this company, but we hear and read about you know, burn victims seeing chilly environments in VR and getting
relief. Well, I was going to get into that. Yeah, for sure. Right.
So from pain.
Right. And that is, there's also, but to go back to, you had asked about flow, right? The stealing fire is something that we give every new employee. Here is a book by the authors of also The Rise of Superman. And flow is something that video game designers have been looking into since the first Flow book came out, right? By Mihail, how do you say his last name? It's one of those impossible names with no vowels in it. It starts with a C. Every game developer that we respect and admire has read that book. And there's a mechanism of punish and reward that puts you into a flow state where your skill level is just behind the skill of what's needed to accomplish the task that keeps you reaching. And that's what gets your focus and attention into a state of flow. So that's something that we look at. And then, as Zach brought up, there's been 15 to 20 years of research, as you mentioned, the Cool game that has been created to help burn victims and the pain reduction from that. The studies that are coming out of Skip Rizzo's lab at USC on using PTSD patient using VR with PTSD patients. There's, I think, University of Houston has been looking at substance abuse through exposure therapy. So we look at all that, and it's a very interesting landscape that's coming into this area of digiceuticals. So we have a vision, a long-term vision, you know, if we can prove certain things out of going there. But in the interim, our consumer-facing product is going to be fun as hell.
Yeah. And did you consider using some kind of mobile EEG solutions or some kind of state, so emotional state?
Sure, I will definitely be using those during our own testing and looking at which parts of the brain seem to be lighting up and the combination. But I don't know that we're going to design that as a requirement for the end user experience. It's highly unlikely.
Yeah, it seems like you guys are shying away from wanting extra peripheral devices to be a main part of the experience. And
I think one thing Zach and I have talked about a lot is making sure, though, that you'll be able to, maybe not phase one, but at some point sync your wearables to it so that we can look at the data collected from that. Would be really interesting that we can feed back to the user as well.
That's a very interesting idea. I never actually read or saw it. I don't know if you ever did read something on it.
I haven't yet.
We're going to do that and tie it to session time
VR.
For sure.
That's got to be accessible.
That's
great
idea.
They all have open APIs, yeah. So it's actually very easy to facilitate that. Zach, do you have anything to add to that too?
One thing I can kind of tie something back to something in the conversation earlier. Nenea said that we were both pushing to do something that only VR can do. And when we look at the emerging science around the Cool game, and when we look at the, you know, elderly people using VR and racing games to get back like executive function and to improve, just kind of brain response in general.
Degenerative aging.
Exactly. What we kind of are experiencing, at least anecdotally at this point, and we intend to prove over time, is that VR has this super immersive quality. And that's a word that Nene and I use. We call it super immersion. And in the video game business, we used to say, oh, sorry, we have dogs here.
Sorry, that's my dog.
Dog doesn't have a headset on. The dog doesn't have a headset, that's why you can't see him. So the idea here is that there are super immersive qualities to the platform that multiply the effectiveness of other aspects of things that have been tried in other platforms. And that's why we're attracted to it.
Mm. So a question that arises in my mind is, when you do end up going to, you know, testing some of these claims at a lab, like what, so I guess what are the different aspects that you really are interested in exploring? I think a few, you mentioned a few, right? Meditative kind of mindfulness is one.
Yep.
Flow state is another. Yep. I think earlier you're mentioning even in terms of excitement and getting people in a state of arousal.
Right. So those would be the first three exact things that we would look at. And there are some methods of measurement that are easier than others. Before and after is a lot easier than during. And so it's that during that I want to try to figure out if we can find a lab that can really help us with that. There are some advancements in that area. But irrespective of that, we'll be doing a lot of qualitative user testing to get user feedback on how the experience makes them feel. That's the first and foremost important thing for us. And we can go to market with that because we're not going to make any claims. We'll let the users speak for it. And we can point to certain research specific to mindfulness and meditation. But as soon as we can quantify something, then that might change the profile of our company for sure. And it's interesting. But again, I go back to this core experience is unique enough that, and we're pretty seasoned in software development and mobile application development, as well as console and PC products. And I don't say that with any arrogance. It's just like bringing that all to this will, sometimes you find as you develop and you start getting user feedback that a new idea emerges out of that, that you weren't even thinking about. So it's just really important that we get into market and start getting that feedback, because if you look at some of the most innovative things are born out of that process where you kind of stumble across the better idea. And if we're too long in development and don't allow that process to happen, I think we cut ourselves off from maybe making and delivering something even more wonderful than what we're thinking.
That iterative process will, I think, really be a big...
So important. I think there's some funny examples. Like, I think, again, being from LA, Botox was originally developed for cross-eyed people. And when they injected it, they saw, you know, the impact on wrinkles, and they realized, oh, we could actually make a lot more money. It expands our audience a lot more. And same thing, I had heard that Viagra was originally intended for angina. Mm-hmm. And obviously, once they got it up and they were doing their tests, they saw some other responses.
Well, they basically saw that a lot of the older folks were
like, yes, exactly.
Good way to put it.
Yeah.
I think this leads us to kind of evaluating what this genre of an experience and
mm-hmm.
where do you see, what are your thoughts on, I guess, some of the other mindfulness or meditation apps that were created in VR, and where do you see the gaps that they, you know, have left, or you know, what are your thoughts on the general space, and are you impressed by it? Yeah. Are you inspired by it? Do you think they're missing something really important?
Well, I think that we're in the first wave of content development, right? So a lot of us, including ourselves with our solitaire game, are taking what we already know how to do and bringing it into VR. And so you see a lot of that kind of content happening. Mm. And again, like, we found that process slightly underwhelming for us as product people, and kept thinking, okay, great. We made a game you can turn around in. What's unique about this? And why would I go through all this trouble of playing solitaire, you know, to put this device and get this big rig when I can do that already on my phone? Mm. And so I think that that's how I look at a lot of what's already out there, is how does this make it different for what I can already do in real life or through my mobile? And I'm not seeing a lot of that. The other thing too is, They might be interesting as first case, like novelty use cases, but they aren't designed in ways that make me want to go back and do it again. And so I'll try it once, but it's been very rare that I've gone back. And Zach, do you kind of want to talk about like what you when you say something is a toy?
Oh yeah,
and what
oh,
that
yeah.
means.
So early on in my career at Activision, I found it valuable to make a very strong distinction between what's a game and what's a toy. Mm. And the definition was very useful to me because in the game process, and when you work in the video game industry, not everybody's an engineer and not everybody's an artist, but everybody's a game designer, right? So everybody comes with ideas about different things. And so game designers who are kind of dyed-in-the-wool purebred game designers like I was have to come up with a vernacular to talk to people and say, well, all right, that idea is interesting, but let me tell you why it may or may not be appropriate for this case. And one of the things that a lot of people don't really understand the distinction about is the notion of something that is a toy versus a game. And a toy, by definition, or my definition, it might be the universal definition, is that it's a thing that's fun to play with that doesn't have rules. Mm-hmm. And a game, by definition, is something that's fun to play with that has rules, inherent limitations, right? Where, and that's the what Nenea was saying before, that's what creates the flow state. So a toy, by definition, cannot create flow state. Now, don't get me wrong, there may be, you know, exceptions to the rule, but what was that?
A fidget spinner.
Yes, a fidget spinner. Now, that might be an exception to the rule because it does actually have its own way to create flow state.
Totally.
But the replayability is very low and that ultimately, yeah, you might get into it. And I'll say that a fidget spinner is, and I don't want to denigrate the users of fidget spinners, but it's more appealing to a younger brain. But so are toys in general. Mm. In other words, my son, who's 2.5, loves playing with a fire truck, and he can play with it over and over again because he doesn't need the inherent limitations of game design to overlay to create more a level of flow and a level of engagement with the experience.
Well, I think you need some skill,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so once you master something like a fidget spinner, what's your repeatability on it?
Right. I mean, it has its own way of feeling that one in particular, physical. Toys that have a physical component are kind of in a different category because our brain responds in a very interesting way to physics, in a perhaps more lasting way than something that doesn't have physics, like let's say a toy doll or something.
Right.
But
we were saying about fidget spinners is that it's the fact that you're trying to master the physics of that.
Yes.
Toy is what.
By the way, which is why Angry Birds is so successful as a specific gameplay because it has the physical component that it's trying to simulate. But we could go on. I could go off on that as a topic.
This is why we have the podcast is to talk about these right. elements that interact together. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. But to just kind of wrap it up. My feeling is that we are looking at, and I don't really want to go too into the what percentage of our experience is going to be this versus that, but I will say this, we come to this experience as game designers, and we look at meditation and meditative-like apps, to your question, as ingredients into an experience that's novel. And I will say this, what we ultimately will be bringing to the market, we have not seen. No one is combining the elements that we're combining to create the effects that we intend to create.
Oh, that's why we are so excited and we invited you. Because, to be honest, a lot of the VR enthusiasts out there is waiting for applications exactly like yours, or at least what you described so far, right? We want to, you know, be mindful about our body, use the VR to explore our mind, and just do more than the Halo trailer you showed in the beginning us. So we want to do more than just shoot at, you know, flat ducks in a duck shooting simulator. We want to, you know, experience and extend and be more immersed. And this is exactly what you're apparently doing.
Is native. Awesome. And that's what Nenea was talking about before. That there is not a body of native VR applications out there, full stop. I can climb an ice waterfall with an ice axe on a PC without VR. I can shoot a duck on a console without VR. It's now the generation of designers of today who need to build native VR native experiences. And that's what you're talking about.
And I think that that'll be the second wave of content. So I don't think that we're going to be unique in that. You see this on all meaningful platforms as they evolve. People start off doing what they know and bringing something familiar. But then once they get their hands into it, they start innovating new things for that device that you wouldn't even think about. I mean, just look at the migration of the mobile phone, right? The last thing we want to do on it today is talk, right? Which was its original.
That's a good
original, really, you know, and there's so much more that we can do with it. And a lot of that has come from the innovation of the content developers once they actually started experimenting. So I would challenge the developer community in VR to go for it, you know, because the more that they do that, the it'll benefit all of us. You know, that people will show up for they will buy the devices and go through all that friction, and hopefully the devices will get more, you know, less and less. You know, the reduction of friction will start to occur more quickly.
Basically, what makes so much out of the experience of an application, if you see the guidelines how to build an app for iOS or Android, and also how apps those days are built. Like when I would start without any knowledge how to write software those days, you know, writing an application for my Android phone, I would find nice tutorials and my app would kind of look like a native Android app because there's so much there and it's basically a common knowledge how to do a proper app. I mean, there are certain design changes like flat design, not flat design, but I swipe, I have buttons, the functionality is there. But when I remember the first app that I used to have on my phone or my smartphone or even Windows Mobile I used before, it was awful. And it took a long time to figure out what is the best, what is, I mean, to basically, it's a core principle, but also takes a step where you basically remove functionality that I usually, you know, strive for. You remove functionality, stripe it down to one function, and suddenly it becomes really good, which is counterproductive to how we used to develop software back then. And now with VR and ambient computing and holographic computing and all those terms, we need a new paradigm, right?
I think you're hitting on the bundling and unbundling of features and apps from ecosystems, but I think that's a whole other conversation, and we're that's running low on time here. I think a lot of things, if you guys have things to add to that, I'd love to.
No,
you know what? I actually do have one thing that I'd like to add. It's interesting because when I heard about the Oculus acquisition, okay, a lot of people were saying, wait a second, Zuckerberg, why would he want to do that? Why VR? And my first thought was virtual presence.
Well, what we're doing right now, right?
Exactly, that's my point, is my hat's off to you guys. Thank you, because I'm having what I would consider a native VR experience right now that's really cool. And so your listeners, you know, you guys have hacked a system that's made for another use case and are using it for something wonderful.
Thank
you. I got my hats off to you.
First time I used the big screen with Azad in the podcast, it blew my mind. Like, I don't see him usually because he's back in US, I'm in Germany, and I kind of saw his mimic from the character. It was like my brain was not able to comprehend what's happening because there's some kind of body language, but it's VR. And I was like, whoa!
Right.
Crazy.
That's right.
And Zach still talks really loud in VR as well. He's the best. This will be Trip is our fourth company working together, and we've worked with Andrea for many years as well. So there is something to be said too about having that core team. You find the way, you know, you work together. It's nice. I'm super excited about this journey. And thank you so much for having us here.
Thank you guys for joining. Before we go away, you guys raised a $4 million round.
We did.
If you guys have job openings and whatnot, I think this would be a
scientific
great place to talk about.
Community, yep. People who would like to do science with your...
Yeah, so we are looking for lab relationships, definitely, and would love to hear from those people. We are also building out an AI layer to the application. One of the qualities that we have is that every time you trip, it needs to be different from the last. And eventually, we want it to get more and more targeted to you, the person tripping. And so it's important that we get that talent in the company sooner than later. And then we do want a very experienced platform architect as well that has experience with community and identity and subscription and those kind of things. It would be great if they're passionate about the space too, all of those resources. So We are building out, and we're really grateful to the team at Mayfield who led our round. This is the first money in into our company, and they gave us enough to survive a slow market because they believed in the idea. And you know, it's very hard to raise money in VR right now because of all the things that we talked about earlier. So again, you know, it's they believed in the idea and they believed in us as a team. They had wanted to invest in another company I was involved in and weren't able to. And so it's maybe it might inspire someone with a big, bold idea to go out. You can still get funding if the idea is bold enough and
native enough.
And native. Yeah, these native ideas are important. They can hit us up on our website. It's Trip, TRIPPINC.com. And there's a contact page in the menu item, and that's how you can reach us. And our jobs are posted on there, and we'll continue to update.
Awesome. And personally to you guys, Nenea and Zach, do you have public Twitter or other social media platforms that yep. people can follow you on?
Yeah, I'm at Nenea, N-A-N-E-A on Twitter, and start from there.
Right. I'm at WordCount.
Nice.
WordCount. Cool.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thank you again, Trip co-founders, for joining us. I am Oz Balabanian. You can find me on Twitter at AzadUX, as well as on Facebook at Oz Balabanian there. Peter, you can be found on Twitter at... Yes. Resilio,
or just search for my name, or search for Research VR, and you will find me.
That's right. We are. You can find our podcast on Twitter at Research VR Cast, Facebook at Research VR Podcast, and you can email us as well at researchvrcast@gmail.com, and yes. Let us know what you think.
Review, subscribe, and rate on iTunes.
That's right. Thank you, everyone that has reviewed our podcast. I think we're almost up to 30 reviews on the podcast, which is. There aren't that many VR podcasts out there or listeners, but we seem to have made a dent in that.
We see the numbers, and I'm pretty sure. Not every listener out there has yet rated us. So
I think. Do we have anything to announce today about the numbers, or should we keep it for next episode?
Let's just say.
Oh, we're almost at 100,000 downloads.
Fantastic!
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Close our mind. We're not doing that much work for the podcast, and seems like it has its own life that it kind of has taken on. So,
well, keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Fantastic. We'll promote it on
our channel. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye, guys.